Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Chof. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will notice 11 lines from the top of Daf Chof. The points mentioned in this Mishnah you will find were referred to in our previous sugya. The Mishnah Ad shelo nimchaka hamegila, omra eini shoysa. If the sota says, I don't want to drink, and the megillah, the parchment containing the sota portion that's written, has not yet been erased, megilosa nignezes uminchosa mispazeres al hadeshen. The megillah, the portion that was written out, is then put away. Nignezes, it's buried. It's the way we treat holy writings so as to preserve their dignity. After all, it's not going to be used for anything. And the mincha, the meal offering, is going to be mispazeres, means burnt. Al hadeshen, deshen is a reference to a special fire place in the temple courtyard for sacrificial offerings that have become, we'll say, unfit or unnecessary. V'ein megilosa k'sheru l'ashkiz b'soita acheres. The megillah, this parchment portion that was written out for this woman, is not fit to be used for a sota, another woman that comes to the base of Mikdash with her sota needs. Nimchaka hamegillah, if the megillah is erased, v'omra tameani, and she declares, I am guilty, I have been defiled. Hamayim nishpochin, the water is poured out. Uminchoso mispazeres al beis hadeshen. Once she says tameani, that's a declaration of her guilt, her confessing of her guilt, and therefore there's no need for the drinking of the water, and there's no need for her meal offering. Nimchaka hamegillah v'omra eini shoysa. If the megillah was erased and she says, I don't want to drink, ma'arin osa umashkin osa baal korcha, we force her to drink against her will. And now the Mishnah goes on to describe what actually happens after she drinks. Eino maspek is lishtois. She doesn't actually have time to finish the drinking. Ad sheponeho morikos v'eineho boltos. Her face, morikos, turns an unusual color, and her eyes bulge, vehemis malis gidin, and her body is characterized by bulging blood vessels. Rashi says, mismalis gidin, hagidin, the blood vessels that are in her jaws, nofchim veniros kimleo gidin, they become bulging and appear as full of gidin. Gidin are blood vessels. Vegam besora nasis shita shonaficha, and her flesh becomes bloated in a ribbed fashion, maybe. Shita means row after row of bloatedness. Vehachitan besifri kemin sharbitin mizurokin ba, and the sifri, the medrash, describes this in a similar fashion. So the woman is certainly undergoing a major physiological catastrophe. Veheim omrim, and those present say, Hotziua, take her out, Shalotitame Azora. She's going to die. Don't allow her to remain there so as not to impose defilement of the dead there where she's located. Now, the term Azora, the courtyard, is a reference to, as Rashi says, either the Nicanor gate, the eastern gate entering the courtyard, or the Ezras Noshim, the courtyard assigned for women that come to the Beis HaMikdash. So there seems to be a sense of urgency on the part of those that are present to make sure she is removed so that there's no Tumas Mace in that area. This is going to be the point of discussion later in the Gemara. Is that really a concern? Is there a problem for a corpse to be there? Granted, in the temple courtyard itself, no, but she's not there to begin with. The Mishnah goes on, Im yesh lo zchus oisa toilo lo, if she has zchus merits, so that even though she drank the water and she may be guilty, the merits will delay or suspend for the time being the effects of the water. Yesh zchus toilo shona achas, yesh zchus toilo shnei shonim, yesh zchus toilo shalosh shonim. There is merit that can delay her death for 1 year, for 2 years, and for 3 years. Mikan Omar Ben Azai. Based on this, Ben Azai concludes, Chayav Odom Lelamed Es Bito Torah. A father is obligated to teach his daughter. Note, we're talking about a female child, a daughter, Torah. Shim Tishte. And if it should ever come to be that she's brought to the Beis HaMikdash as a sota and would drink the water, teida shazchus toile lo. Rashi says teida shazchus toile lo. Tireve tilmad beparshas soita shazchus toile diafino mivniksav nizazera veniksa yedei zchuyos. She's cleansed from. She's cleansed as a result of having merit. Kedei zria zera. The amount of time to bear a child. That's Tisha Chadoshim. Yeshomim Yosim Fosh Mugmara. How long will Ischus stand in her good stead? As the Pasuk says, V'nikso, the cleansing of the, by virtue of the merits, V'niz Rosera, in order to bear a child. That would be 9 months. The Mishnah continues, Rebbe Lozer Omer Kol Hamalameg Bito Yitera. Anyone who teaches his daughter Torah, Lomda Tiflus, he is teaching her, and here we have to translate, leaving room for the Gemara to ask its relevant questions, but here the translation would be, teaching a daughter Torah is teaching her foolishness. And that's a very difficult expression to leave uninterpreted, because the mere translation says that the Torah is foolishness, and you're teaching her foolishness. And heaven forbid, chas v'shalom, that we should refer to the Torah that way. Therefore, the Gemara will discuss this. Rabbi Yeshua, we continue, Omer, Roitza Isha Bekav V'Tiflus, a woman would prefer to have a kav, is a measure of grain, usually, and lightheadedness, tiflus is levity, frivolousness. A woman would prefer to have that, a small amount, say a small, a more limited income, but have a life of tiflus, mitisha kabin uprishus, and have a lot more, 9 kav of measure, which is symbolic of something much more than 1 kav. Uprishus is an expression indicating, we'll say, the opposite of levity, separation, seriousness, a life of earnestness. Hu hoya omer chosid shaitiv rasha orum. Rabbi Yeshua was known to say that the pious fool, the Rosh Orum, the cunning, wicked one, the Isha Prusha, These are terms that the Gemara will deal with when we get to it. Mishal prusha umakas prushim harei elu mevale oilam. These kinds of people are literally, they're described as destroyers of the world. Mevale, balui, is something that is decrepit, is worn out, that which is destructive. Rashi points out that each one of these will be explained in the Gemara. Before we continue in the Gemara, on the side we have an Osei topic heading, Rabbi Meir Hoya Sofer. We'll see that Rabbi Meir was described as a scribe. He was, in fact, someone who wrote holy works, the Sefer Torah scrolls, mezuzahs, tefillin. That's what a sofer does. So Rabbi Meir was a sofer. The Lomad me Rabbi Akiva ume Rishoel. He was a student of Rabbi Akiva and of Rabbi Shmuel. The Hiskir Shoya Matil Kan Kantun Lesochadio. In the Gemara, Rabbi Meir reveals that he used to add a, we'll call it a chemical, kankantom. This chemical, when reacting with ink, would make it indelible. Under the Mivneh, the structural note, a diamond appears, which highlights the names Rabbi Akiva and later Rabbi Yishmael. As far as an overview of the Gemara, we're not going to mention the details, just the overview. Rabbi Meir tells us about his background, and in the first version of the story, Rabbi Meir says that he used to learn, study by Rabbi Akiva, and he then moved over to study by Rabbi Shmuel. Later in the Gemara, we're going to be presented with an opposite order of events, where Rabbi Meir tells us he used to learn by Rabbi Yishmael, and then he went over to learn by Rabbi Akiva. Who did he start off learning with will be an issue discussed later in the Gemara. And another issue that will be discussed is that, when Rabbi Meir was learning with these great rabbis, he informed them of his adding kankantom to the dio, and in the first story, the first version that we see, Rabbi Yishmael objected to the adding of the kankantom. In the second version, Rabbi Akiva is the one reported as prohibiting it. So there's going to be a seeming inconsistency in the story of Rabbi Meir's life as the Gemara presents two versions. And we will have to deal with that inconsistency later. As we turn to the Gemara text, you notice we open with a long marking. We just called it Rabbi Meir. It's Rabbi Meir telling us his story. The Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mishum, Rabbi Meir. So it was reported in the name of Rabbi Meir, Kishoisi Lame Torah Eitz Rabbi Akiva, when I was learning Torah by Rabbi Akiva, Hoyisi Matil Kan Kantum Lusochat Yo, Velo Amar Li Dofer. I used to add kankantom, that chemical that we said makes the ink indelible. I used to add it to the dio, to the ink, and he did not say anything to me. In other words, he didn't express any objection. Shebosi Eitzel Rabbi Shmuel, when I then came to learn by Rabbi Shmuel, Amar li b'ni ma malachtecha, Rabbi Shmuel inquired of Rabbi Meir, my son, what is your occupation? Amarti lo lablor ani. He says, Rabbi Meir said, I'm a scribe. Omar li, bini, heve zoyer, be careful, shemalachtechom leches shemayim hi. Your occupation is a holy occupation. And in writing holy works, shemo tachsir ois achas, oi tiasir ois achas, nimtseis ato machriv es kol ha'olam kulo. You can end up by either missing a letter, and Rashi gives tangible examples of this. How, if let us say the pasuk that you're writing is Hashem Elokim MS, and the Lord Almighty is truthful, And the word MS is spelled Aleph Mem Sof. If you drop the Aleph from that, you're going to leave just the letters Mem Sof. And Mem Sof would be blasphemous in this context. The word mace means dead. So you can see how leaving out a letter could be something of a blasphemous nature. And as it's described here, you would machrivas olam, you're in effect destroying the world. Likewise, by adding a letter, the pasuk says, for example, gracious bora elokim. In the beginning, the Almighty created. And the word bora is in the singular. He alone created the world. But if you add, let's say, a vov to it, you would end up having the word in a plural form. Also, blasphemous. So the moral continues with Rebbe Meir responding. Amarti lo, I said to him, says Rebbe Meir, Dover echod yeshli shani mati l'sochad yove kan kantam shmoi. I have something. I have a chemical that I add to the ink, and the chemical's name is kankantum. The give and take here is already a little difficult to understand. On the one hand, Rabbi Yishmael is exhorting Rabbi Meir to be very careful not to add or subtract letters. Rabbi Shmuel's response says, well, I've got this chemical. How does the chemical have anything to do with missing letters or adding letters? Omar Lee, and Rabbi Shmuel says back after, he says to me, after I told about my kankantom, he says, V'chim atilin kankantom l'sochad yo. Are you allowed to add kankantom to the ink? Ha-toyra omra umacha, k'sav sheyucha limchois. The Torah says, in the context of the Parsha of the Sota, that it shall be erased, which means a type of writing that can be erased. And if you're going to add kantantum, you're making it indelible. Rashi, toward the lower part of the narrow lines, ksav shiuchal limchois, Rabbi Shmuel, sovar, Rabbi Shmuel is of the opinion, moichik in law min ha-Torah. According to Rabbi Shmuel, they could take a Torah scroll from the from a shul where Torahs are stored, from the ark in which Torah scrolls are kept in synagogues, and turn to the Parsha of the Sota, Bamidbar Perakei, and from the Sefer Torah erase the necessary verses, as we've learned in earlier Mishnayos. V'lo boi k'siva lishmo, and Rabbi Shmuel doesn't require that the writing of the parsha has to be done with a specific woman, with a specific sota in mind. The parsha sota l'chudo k'kopit, what Rabbi Shmuel is saying is that if you're going to use the kankantom, that might be fine and good, but it's not going to be good when you get to Bamidbar Perakei, where the Parsha Sota appears. That is, according to what Rashi says, that's where the prohibition of using kankantom in the eyes of Rabbi Shmuel. Let's continue in the Gemara. The Gemara at this point raises the difficulty that we mentioned before. My Ko'omar le, umay ko'mahadir le. Then we look at Rashi. My ko'omar le, umay ko'mahadir le. My ko'omar le, Rabbi Shmuel. De ko'mahadir le, Rabbi Meir, dover echod yeshli sheisa roshim ve'eno nimchak. What is it that Rabbi Shmuel said to Rabbi Meir that caused Rabbi Meir to say, oh, I've got this special chemical causing the ink to become indelible? Ma inin kantom etzuch isur. What is the relevance of this chemical to that which Rabbi Shmuel said? Be careful, don't miss out letters and don't add letters. Now we go back to the Gemara, and the Gemara fills in the, we'll say, missing elements of the discussion. And by the way, this takes a couple lines. You see, we have a long answer marking. Hochi ko'omar le. thusly he said to him. Now, after Rabbi Shmuel said, be careful with your work, Rabbi Meir says, lo mibayo b'chaseros v'yaseros deboki ano. Rabbi Meir, in responding to Rabbi Shmuel's warning, says, you have nothing to worry about as far as adding letters or missing letters. Deboki ano, I am an expert. It's likely that Rabbi Meir had a photographic memory. And I say that based on not only what we see here, but the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Ches Amid Beis. The Gemara here continues, Elo afilu lemechash lezvuv. But even a worry about a fly landing on the wet ink, the Dilma osi v'yosev atage d'dalet u'mochik le'umashvi le'resh. Just imagine. I hope everyone knows what the letter Dalet looks like. Here you see it in the word Dedilmo. You see a Dalet? At the roof of the Dalet, the right-hand extreme of the roof juts out in the right direction, a little bit beyond the upright leg of the Dalet. Now that little jutting out makes the Dalet look like a Dalet. Imagine a airborne insect would land on the wet ink just at that point. And we have a pasuk that says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The Almighty is Echad, is the embodiment of unity, of excellence, of singularity. There are a number of different interpretations as to what the word Echad means, but it's a very significant word, a word of praise, of exaltation of the Almighty. However, if that Dalet roof abutment would be erased by the airborne critter, the ink that is responsible for that little extension will then be gone, and you'll end up with a word that would be of a blasphemous nature, achir. So Rabbi Meir says to Rabbi Shmuel, you have nothing to worry about. Even a concern like that, dovar echod yeshli, I have something, shani mati l'soch adyo, that I add to the ink, the kantantom shmo, and the name of that chemical is kantantom, so that even if the fly would land on that extension, the ink would remain in the parchment with an indelible mark remaining. So you have nothing to worry about regarding my being in this profession. Now the Gemara asks about the whole story and order of events. Eini, is that so? That which we've said till now, v'ha Tanya. Do we not have the following source? Amar Rabbi Meir Kishisi Lomei Torah Tzor Rabbi Shmuel. Hoisi Matil Kankantam L'sochatyo. When I started off learning by Rabbi Shmuel, I added Kankantam to the ink. V'lo Amar Li Dover, and he didn't say anything. He said no. Stated no objection. Kishabosi to Rabbi Kiva, also line. When I came to learn by Rabbi Kiva, he forbade it. Kashya shimush ashimush, kashya osro aosro. In comparing these two stories, first of all, there's a contradiction regarding by whom did Rabbi Meir learn initially, and the second is who prohibited the kankantom. Bishlamo shimush ashimush lo kashya, as far as by whom he learned first order of learning, there really is no difficulty. Meikora also lekame Rabbi Kiva. When Rabbi Meir started out his career of Torah study, he went to learn by Rabbi Akiva. Now Rabbi Akiva was known as a very deep thinker, highly analytical, and in order to be successful in Torah analysis, which involves comparing and contrasting different topics, resolving contradictions, and much, much more. One has to be familiar with the primary sources beforehand. You can't describe comparisons between two topics unless you're familiar with the two topics to begin with before you engage in analysis. Well, Rebbe Meir found himself jumping in to learn by the great Rebbe Akiva, but Kevan de Lomotzi Koma Libei, but I wasn't able to understand him, and as we explained, because I came at a point that I wasn't familiar with the primary sources. So, also the Kamei, the Rebbe Yishmael, Rebbe Meir then went to learn by Rebbe Yishmael, the Gomar Gemara, and what Rebbe Yishmael would teach was basic text, basic sources. That's Gomar Gemara without the analysis. Hodar, also the Kamei to Rebbe Kiva, and then he went back to Rebbe Kiva, Savar Svara, and then he engaged in analysis, analytical learning. Here you see a reference to a major issue regarding all those who are engaged in Torah study, and that is, at what point is one said to be qualified or ready, or say ripe, for engaging in Gemara analysis? And from here, one would conclude that if one is familiar with the primary sources, familiar with all of the Shas, at that point, he would then be ripe for analyzing and comparing the different topics that one finds throughout the Shas. So it's all a matter of order. There are those that misconstrue this type of discussion and present one form of learning as being greater than the other. That's obviously false. It's simply a matter of how does one pursue Torah learning in a proper logical order in order to achieve the ultimate goal of, in terms of, when you say ultimate goal by way of the Torah learning, to be able to analyze in depth all kinds of Torah topics. So it's all a matter of order. First, one will amass the primary sources, not engaging in too much analysis at that point. Once the primary sources are familiar, then one would be advised and directed to engage in analysis. And truth be told, it's almost a natural outgrowth of one who is familiar with many, many sources, with many primary sources. His own spirit demands of him to, hey, what's really going on over here? We've got to look into these things further. And that's all a natural outgrowth of being familiar with so many primary sources. So as far as Rebbe Meir's learning career is concerned, it depends at which point in time you look at things. Did he learn first by Rebbe Shmuel or first by Rebbe Akiva? Well, at the very beginning, he did learn first by Rebbe Akiva, but at that early point, he wasn't able to follow him. Then he went to Rebbe Shmuel. If you look at the story from middle of the events, he was found learning by Rebbe Shmuel, then went back to learn later on by Rebbe Akiva. So we've resolved what's called shimush. Shimush, we didn't explain, it's literally shimush means serving, but it means the study of Torah. However, ela osra a osra kasha, who prohibited the use of the kankantom? It was either Rebbe Akiva or Rebbe Yishmael. And between the two sources of information, we have the story told by Rebbe Yehuda versus the information in the Braisa, and there we have what appears to be a contradiction. Kashya, so that's left unresolved. Who was the one that prohibited the use of the kankantom? And once again, just for review purposes, which will be beneficial to know later in the Gemara, the objection to the use of the kankantom was primarily or restricted to the use of the kankantom in the writing of a Sefer Torah when you get to the Parsha dealing with Sota, which leads us to understand that such an attitude, such an opinion means that that section of the Torah, you could take a Torah scroll from any synagogue, bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and use that section for the Sota that needs the erasure to take place. Was it written for her? No. It wasn't written, that section of the Torah scroll wasn't written with this woman in mind. Well, it doesn't seem to matter. You don't need to have what's called Ksiva Lishma, the writing with her in mind when it comes to the writing of the Sota Parsha. Now, before we go on in the Gemara, let us present an overview of what to expect. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivne heading. Notice Roman numerals 1 and 2. And when you look in your Gemara text at the bottom line, you see a Roman numeral number 1. The Roman numeral number 2 will appear on the fifth line from the top of Amud Beis. These are Shnei Brisos, two Tanaic sources. U'b'chol echad muva machloikis tanoim ha-koshur li-parshas soita. In each one of these Tanaic sources, there will be a Tanaic disagreement that has relevance to the issue of the Parshas Sota, that section that's written on behalf or written on the occasion or for a Sota. Be'omid Beis, when we go further into the Gemara, you will see how Gemara menaseh lehamid hani tanoi kahani tanoi. We said that both of these Tanaic sources have a Tanaic disagreement within each one. The Gemara will try to do is to parallel the Tanaic controversy in source number one with the Tanaic controversy that will appear in source number two. Avo b'hemshich yuva shnei d'chios l'nisayon zeh. But as we then go even further into the Gemara, you will see, and if you want to navigate with markings, you might notice a double underlining highlighting the names Rav Papa and Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchok on Amud Beis. These are responses to the attempt of making the parallel between the two Tanaic sources. What we've just done is given you a skeletal overview structurally of what's going to happen in the Gemara. As far as the content, let us go right into the text. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Omer hoya Rabbi Meir, lakol matilin kan kantom, into all holy writings you can add this chemical, the making the letochadio, into the adding the kankantum to the ink. We continue at the top of Amud Beis, chutz mi parshas soita bilvad, with the exception of, I'm going to refer to this as Bamidbar Perek Hay, with the specific psukim in mind that deal with the sota. Even when you're writing a Sefer Torah, and that is very important to emphasize, when it says here chutz mi parshas sota, do not make the mistake of thinking that this is a reference to the specific separate portion that's written on behalf of a sota in the Beis HaMikdash. That is what Rabbi Yankiv talks about right now. But the Tanakama, this first opinion, Rabbi Meir, we can say, is saying that the kankantom is fine, but not when you get to the writing of Bamidbar Hay, even in a Sefer Torah. Rabbi Yankiv Oimer, Mishmo, he has a different version of Rabbi Meir. At first we had Rabbi Yehuda's version of Rabbi Meir, now we have Rabbi Yankiv's version of Rabbi Meir. He says you can add kankantom to all writings, chutz mi parshas soita shel mikdash, with the exception of the special passage that's written on behalf of a sota that comes to the Beis HaMikdash. But as far as adding kankantom to a Sefer Torah, including Bamidbar Perek Hay that contains the parshas sota, no problem. You can make that indelible. Why? Because the Sefer Torah is not fit to be used for the sota process in the Beis HaMikdash. According to the Tanakhama, a Sefer Torah, it wasn't written for her in mind, is fit for using in the Beis HaMikdash if a Sota case arises. According to Rabbi Yankov, a Sefer Torah from a synagogue is not fit for that. What is used for the Sota in the Beis HaMikdash? A special, separate parchment is written out with the Parshas Sota, but not a Sefer Torah. My Binayu, what is the point of difference? And we, of course, already explained it, but here the Gemara asks, what is the point of difference between Rabbi, the first version, and the second version? Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Limchik lo min haTorah iko Binayu. The ability or the right, the license to erase the Parshas Sota from a Sefer Torah, from a Torah scroll. According to the Tanakhama, you can erase from a Torah scroll, and according to Rabbi Yankiv, you cannot erase from a Torah scroll. Vehani Tanoi, Kihani Tanoi. And the Gemara, this is well, the first stage of the Gemara, feels that the Tanaic controversy we just learned is parallel to the following Tanaic controversy. Desanya, Ein Megilosa Ksheira Lahashkis Ba Soita Acheres. The Tanakhama of Source 2, Tanakhama is the first opinion in Source 2, says that the Megillah, the portion written for a particular Sota, is not fit to be used for another Sota. So if the portion was prepared for Lady 1, it cannot be used for Lady number 2. What impression do you get from that? The impression is that the portion must be written with the Sota in mind, with the specific Sota in mind. Did we see in the previous source someone that would feel the same way? Well, if you say that a Sefer Torah from a synagogue is not fit for the Sota process, that would be the same idea, because the Sefer Torah was not written with this specific Sota woman in mind. So opinion 2 of source 1, maybe Reb Yankiv, would parallel opinion 1 of source 2. Let's continue. Rabbi Achi bar Yoshio Imer, Migiloso Kshera Lahashkois Ba Soita Cheres. Rabbi Achi disagrees with the Tanakhama and says a portion, a Sota portion written for one Sota is fit to be used for another Sota. Why? The feeling is that it doesn't have to be written with her in mind. So what if it was written for Mrs. Sota 1? It can be used for Mrs. Sota number 2. And that idea would parallel opinion 1 of the first source. Opinion 1 of the first source says you can use a Sefer Torah from the synagogue for a Sota, even though it wasn't written for her specifically. Rav Achi also says you don't need the portion to be written specifically for her. So as far as paralleling opinions, opinion 2 of source 2 parallels opinion 1 of source 1. Everything that we've said till now is now going to be, we'll say, either reversed or brought into question. You can see we have a long marking. This is called a long rejection, a dechiyah. You'll notice that we've highlighted the key players over here. They are Rav Papa, and he's double underlined, and Rav Nachman Yitzchok, a few lines later, he too. There isn't necessarily any disagreement between Rav Papa and Rav Nachman Yitzchok, as Rashi points out, but rather each one is showing, was like picking on specific opinions in the sources we saw and show how they are not parallel. In other words, when we claimed that opinion 1 of source 2 would parallel opinion 2 of source 1, Rav Papa will say, no, I don't see a parallel. And when we said opinion 1 of source 1 is parallel to opinion 2 of source 2, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok will say, no, not necessarily. They're not parallel. Why? That is left for the Gemara. Now we take a look in the Gemara. Omar of Papa Dilma Lohi. Maybe not so. Not like we suggested. Ad kan lo komar Tanakama. Now Tanakama means first opinion, but that's not very clear. The first opinion where? So it's first opinion of source 2. We tried to say opinion 1 of source 2 is parallel to opinion 2 of source 1. And the theme that we thought was common to the two was the idea that the portion has to be written with the portion that you're writing, the sota portion has to be written with that particular woman in mind. Here the Gemara continues, says, not so, ad kan lo komar tanakamo, the first opinion of source 2, hasam. He said there that a Megillah written for lady 1 cannot be used for lady number 2. He said that Elokevon de intik l'shum Rachel lo hodra mintika l'shum Leah. Rachel and Leah are just arbitrary names of women, and intik linatek is to have something removed from. And how does that figure over here? So Reb the Tanakama of source 2 says that once a sota portion was intik l'shum rochel, means it was, you can say, you know, it was removed from all other women and made specifically for Rochel. In other words, it's we'll say forcibly in a proactive way prepared for Rochel specifically and not for anyone else, and therefore if it's not going to be needed by Rachel, it can't then be, let's say, detached from Rachel and then used for Leah. There's too much specificity involved when the portion is written for a specific woman in mind. When it's written for a specific woman, it becomes, we'll say, reserved for her. You can't then remove it from her and use it for someone else. Aval, Torah, when you're talking about a Sefer Torah, the Stamok Siva, when the Sefer Torah is written, it wasn't written with someone in mind. It's still like it's still vacant. It's still eligible. It's still available. It was written Stam. It was written in a general fashion. Hachi Nami Demachkinon. In such a case, it wouldn't be such a big deal, so to speak, to take a Sefer Torah. It wasn't, which wasn't reserved for any specific woman when they wrote Bamidbor Perakei. And now a Sota comes along needing the erasure of Parsha Sota. Use a Sefer Torah so that opinion 1 of source 2 could very well accept opinion 1 of source 1 that you'd be able to use a Sefer Torah. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, he too says, Dilma Lohi, maybe the paralleling that we did before isn't so. What did we try to do? What else did we try to do? We tried to parallel Rav Achi, who was opinion 2 of source 2, with opinion 1 of source 1. Ad kan lo koma Rabbi Achi Bar Yoshia Hosam. Rabbi Achi allowed the sota portion written for lady number 1 to be used by lady number 2. You know why? That's his leniency is there, Ella b'Megillah. It's there with regard to a portion, a separate portion written on a separate piece of parchment for a sota. The ichtiv l'shum olos ba'olam. It was written with, now olos means curse, because the writing of the of that, the writing of the sota portion for a sota lady involves its eventual erasure over the water and her drinking it and her possible dying from it. That's the concept of olos. So once you have a portion that was written with this mindset, it doesn't matter if it was written for lady one, use it for lady two, because there's a commonality here in that at least it was written with olos in mind. Aval Torah de l'Islamic Siva. a Sefer Torah is written for learning purposes. The reading of the Torah scroll in the synagogue is for people to hear the Torah portion, and that's their Torah learning. It's not written with olos in mind, with curses in mind. It's written for educational purposes. Hachinami delo machkinon. Rabbi Achi himself would say you cannot use a Sefer Torah from the synagogue for a Sota woman in the Beis Hamikdash. Oh, so Rav Achi then would end up like Rav Yankiv from source number one, namely opinion two of source one, that said you cannot use a Sefer Torah. So at this point then, all that we tried to say before of trying to parallel the opinions of source number one with specific opinions in source two, you see that cannot be proven, or you cannot maintain that position. We continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Achi Bar Yoshia, he said that a Megillah written for Lady 1 could be used for Lady 2. Less lay, does he not hold from the concept of Lishma? And we find this concept of Lishma, meaning a specificity, written, Lishma literally means for her. We find this in the case of divorce documents, as is featured in this source, that's an absolute necessity. Kosav Ligaresh es Ishto. A man decided to divorce his wife, and he wrote up a divorce document. Finimlach, and then he had a change of mind. I don't want to divorce her. The document is still extant. Motsoi ben Iroi v'yomar lo, a member of the same community, same city, and when writing divorce documents, you have to indicate where it is written. So you indicate the city name. Someone from the same town meets up with him and says, "Hey, Amalo Shmi Kishimcha v'Shem Ishti k'Shem Ishtecha. We have the same names, and our wives have the same names. And I want to divorce my wife. So you give me the divorce document that you wrote up. You're not using it. Let me use it. Postal Lagarish Bo, it's unfit for the second fellow to use it, because when it was written, it wasn't written with him nor his wife in mind." So then, how can Rabbi Achi Bar Yoshia say that a Sota portion that was written for Lady 1 can be used by Lady number 2? Amri, we answer, Hosam, in the case of the get, the Kosav law, Omar Rachmona. The Torah says, and you shall write for her, the Kosav law Sefer Krisis, you shall write for her a divorce document. And by presenting it that way, we learn Bo'inon Ksiva Lishma. The Kosav law. Law means specifically for her. That means that the writing has to be with her in mind. That's a requirement by divorce documents. The Gemara asks, Ochanami v'yosa law, in the case of the Sota, does it not say, and it shall be done for her? The Gemara says, that's true, it does say that, but my asiya, what does the word asiya refer to? Mechika, it refers to the erasing. It doesn't refer to the initial writing of the Sota passage. So the writing of the Sota passage does not require Lishma, that it's written for that specific Sota in mind. When it comes to the erasing of the passage, it has to be erased for that specific Sota in mind, and not then have that water be used by someone else. Eino maspekis lishtois ad sheponeh v'chulei. The Mishnah described that she practically just finishes the drinking and she starts to deteriorate right there, so that the setting in of her death is immediate with the drinking. Money, who would say that? Rebbe Shimon, The Mishnah would appear then to be in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. Yomar makrives minchosa v'achar kach mashke. First, the mincha is offered, and then the drinking takes place. The kama de lo karvu minchosa lo bat kilomaya. We know that as long as the mincha was not offered, the water would be ineffective. Dechsiv mincha zikaron mazkeres avon. The mincha is described as being part and parcel of the accounting of her sin, meaning part and parcel of the curse that affects her. So now, that having been said, that the mincha is an essential element of her, of the curse. If you want to put it more, I'd say, bold terms, the mincha is part of the ingredients required for her death. Now, if that's the case, then when the Mishnah says that upon her drinking she will die, what about the mincha? Ah, the mincha was offered before. The mincha was offered before, so the first element in activating her death was taken care of. She then drinks, and immediately upon the drinking, she starts to die. So, what's the order? First mincha, then drinking. Who says that? Rabbi Shimon. Amos Sefer, continue reading the Mishnah. It says in the Mishnah, Yesh lo zchus ha'yisa teila lo, if the woman has merits, even if she happens to be guilty, the merits will serve to delay or suspend the effects of the water. Ason l'rabbanon. That approach is in consonance with the Rabbanon. D'yi Rabbi Shimon, ho'amar ein zchus teila b'mayim amorim. Rabbi Shimon, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, says that merit does not suspend the effectiveness of the water. Person might have merits, but that's not going to stop the water from killing a guilty woman. So now the question is, our Mishnah is in accordance with whom? When you look at the immediate drinking death description, that sounds like Rabbi Shimon. First mincha, then drinking. And when you continue reading the Mishnah, when it talks about the effectiveness of merits, that's not like Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara answers, Amar Rav Chista, Ha'amani Rabbi Akiva Hi. Our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Akiva, D'yomar Makrives Minchos of Acha Mashke, as we've learned earlier in our previous year, that first mincha, then drinking, is what Rabbi Akiva also holds by. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon agree on that point, the order. U'bizchus Sofar Lo, K'rabonan, when it comes to the power of merit, Rabbi Akiva, he's not bound by Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Akiva holds like the Rabbanon that merit is toila, zchus is toila. And that's, of course, what our Mishnah taught. So our Mishnah would be, according to Rav Chisa's understanding, authored by Rabbi Akiva. V'heim omrim hotzi'uha shelotetame azora. The issue that the Gemara deals with here is what we already introduced earlier, and that is, why is there any necessity of taking her out of the Azora? Now, the Azora referred to here is the Ezras Noshim. It's the women's courtyard. The women's courtyard is called Machne Levia. There are three Machnos that we speak about in the context of Tumah: Machne Yisrael, Machne Levia, and Machne Shechina. The prohibition of Tumei Mace or Mesim, that prohibition is restricted to the Machne Shechina. The Machne Shechina is defined as the temple courtyard, the Azora, the main Azora. That which is outside of the main Azora, till you get to the foot of the Temple Mount, to the beginning of Har Abayis, that's called Machne Levia. Why the term Machne Levia? That has to do with the way the Jews traveled in the Midbar. For our purposes, though, all one has to recognize is that the woman, the Sota, as she is about to die, where is she standing? She's not standing in Machne Shechina. She's standing in the Shaar Nikanor that doesn't have Kedushas Azor, or she's standing in the Ezras Noshim, the women's courtyard, which also has Machne Levia status to it. My taima. Why in the Mishnah did they say, oh, take her out of here? They soak the woman when she finished drinking, and they see that her eyes are starting to bulge. They say, take her out of here. Why? The Dilma Mesa, she might die. Well, Lememra, and here we start a long question. Lememra de Mesa Osir Bemachne Levia. Are you suggesting then that a corpse would be forbidden to be located in Machne Levia, the Levite camp, which, as we said before, is a reference to the area contained in Har HaBayis, up till the Azara. Is a mace, is a corpse forbidden over there? V'hatanya. Tomei mace, mutter likones lemachne levia. Someone who has been defiled to the dead is allowed to enter the machne levia. V'lo tomei mace milvad omru elo afilu mace atzmo. Not only is someone who was defiled by virtue of his having contact with the dead, but even the corpse itself is allowed in Machne Levia Shinemar. The Pasuk says, Vayikach Moshe's Atzmois Yosef Imo. And Moshe took the bones, the remains of Yosef, together with him. And what does Imo mean? Imo b'mechitzaso. Together with him in his precinct. Where was Moshe Rabbeinu located? Moshe Rabbeinu was a Levi. You have then Moshe Rabbeinu with the remains of Yosef. That is what we call mace. The question then is, what are they all concerned about in the Mishnah? Why are they saying, get rid of her, take her out of here? Amar Abaye. Abaye explains, you know why? Take her out of here. Not because she might die, but because of the physical trauma that she is experiencing right now by having consumed the Soto waters, and we see that her eyes are bulging. Shema Tifros Nida. We're afraid that she might all of a sudden have a nida blood release. This is the blood release that's unique to women. Nida is associated with a menstrual cycle, but here, because of the extenuating circumstances, that's what might happen, and someone who is a nida is in fact forbidden to be in Machne Levia. There are other kinds of temeim as well. Tumos, hayotze migufo, tumos, different types of defilement that originate in one's body, and hence different emissions that create tuma, that kind of tuma is forbidden in Machne Levia. And because of what's happening to her, she might become a nida, and she is not allowed to be there. The Gemara asks, Lememro de Biatusa Marpi. Are you suggesting that biatusa? Biatusa is a term referring to fear, fright. We have to be careful how to translate the word, as you'll see in the continuation of the Gemara. But are you saying that biatusa, let's say, fright, marpi, marpi means, literally means loosens up. And for our purpose, it means it opens up the inner organs of the woman, the reproductive organs from where the dam nida originates. The term you'll see in Rashi is the mokar. The mokar is the womb, the uterus. So are you saying that biatusa then causes that to happen? The Gemara says, yes. Fright does cause a blood release. Dechtiv. The Pasuk says in the context of Queen Esther, in the story of Mordechai, Esther, and Ahasuerus, it says there that when she heard of what was happening, Vatischalchel Hamalka Me'oid. That's the word, that's the Pasuk. V'omar Rav Shepir Sonida. But the, and Rav explains what the Pasuk is alluding to is her becoming a Nida. So what do we see? Just like Esther had a frightful experience, and she became a nida, so too the Sota woman who's going through this traumatic experience, that is what we suspect might happen. So get her out of the Machne Levia. A nida is prohibited to be in a Machne Levia. Gemara asks, this whole business of fright causing blood release, v'anantan, but we have learned, charoda misalek es domim. Charoda, fear, actually stops blood flow. Well, then, is this not a source that contradicts that which we've said? The Gemara says, when you deal with the realm of fear and fright and scaredness and whatever, there are two kinds. Pachta tzomis, biatusa marpi. Pachta, pachad. Let's try to explain it as a state of worriedness. It's not something sudden. It's extended worry. That tzomis, tzomis means seals up. So that if a woman is, let's say, you have this often in wartime situations where people are in hiding, and it's a long-term fear that possesses people, it's not surprising that women's menstrual cycles stop. However, sudden fright, biatusa, marpi, that loosens up the system and blood will flow. And we simply have to assume that in the case of the sota, when she drinks the water, the effects are rather sudden, and that would generate a dam nida flow, and that's why it was important for her to be removed from the machne levia, from the Har HaBayis. Yesh lo zchus oisutila lo. On the side of the Gemara under our notes, our topic heading, we have a very general heading. How much time can a merit that a woman may have actually suspend or delay the effects of the water? The Gemara quotes the Mishnah, Yesh lo zchus hoseteilu lo. And then the Mishnah went on to say, "Yesh zchus toilu shonim, yesh zchus toilu shnei shonim, yesh zchus toilu shalosh shonim." Merit can suspend the effects, delay the effects for 1 year, for 2 years, for 3 years. The Gemara asks, and here we have a long question marking. So take note of the fact that this question continues till the third line from the top of Chof Aleph Amud Aleph. Moni Masnisen. Who could possibly be the author of our Mishnah that indicated Schus Toila for 3 years? Lo Abba Yoisi ben Chonon, velo Rebbe Lozer ben Yitzchok Yishkvar Doron, velo Rebbe Yishmael. Three names were just cited. Our Mishnah would not parallel any of them. Of course, what we see now is a source, a Tanaic source, where these three opinions appear, dealing with this very topic of Schus Toila. Desanya, Im Yesh Lo Schus Toila Lo Shloshe Chadoshim Kedei HaKorasa Ubar Divrei Abba Yosi Ben Chonon. If a woman has merit, she is a sota, her merits can delay the effects of the water for 3 months. What's the significance of 3 months? That's enough time in general that a woman who was impregnated, you will notice her pregnancy. We're not saying that the pregnancy has relevance to the sota per se, but it's an idea that's derived from the posuk. Rashi says here, she's cleansed through merit, kedei, the amount of time, v'nizra zera, for the seeding of the seed. What does that mean? Kishior, enough time sheuber nikubimuberes, that the embryo would become visible or noticeable in a woman that's pregnant. So we usually use as a rule of thumb the time period of 3 months. The next opinion, Rebbe Lozer ben Yitzchok Ishkvar Dorom Omer, Tisha Chadoshim. What is the extent of Zchus and its effectiveness in delaying water effects? 9 months. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, V'niksa v'nizra zera. The woman who drinks and she's clean in the sense she has merit, it says, V'nizra zera halen Omer. And elsewhere it says, Zera yavdenu yisupar. And that leads us to conclude, Zera haroi lesaper, that the sota time period is based on not just impregnation, but that type of, we'll say, seeding that people will eventually say praise of. When do people say praise in this context? When they have a child that can live. Well, that's a child that's born after 9 months of pregnancy. So from these psukim, on one pasuk says v'nizra zera, and the other pasuk from Tilim speaks about zera yavdenu yisupar yisupar, means to tell about, to speak about. What kind of seeding is that which people speak about? That is a child that is born. How long does it take for the child to be born? 9 months. That's the amount of time that v'nixo v'nizra zera means. Next, third opinion. Rabbi Shmuel Amar, Shnei Moser Chodesh. Merit can suspend punishment or delay punishment for 12 months. This is the third opinion, 12 months. We're going to then read on in the source, but you're not going to see any reference to 3 years. And hence, we have our problem. Our Mishnah doesn't seem to conform to any of the opinions that deal with Schus Toila. Now, Rabbi Shmuel indicated 12 months. Even though you don't have an outright proof that Zotah's merits delay 1 year, we have a hint, we'll call it maybe an analogous case that whereby wherein we see 12 months of merit. Or merit, let me say, merit working to suspend punishment or delay punishment for 12 months. Dichtiv, as it says in Daniel, Perek, Dalet, Posuk, Chav, Dalet. Just a word of background. Daniel was a leadership figure for the Jewish people during the Babylonian exile, during which time King Nebuchadnezzar, the Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian emperor, was ruling. He had a dream, and in the dream, he noticed frightening images, and the dream indicated that he, Nebuchadnezzar, would be cast away from humanity and live amongst animals. That was very upsetting, of course, to Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel, one of his ministers, offered an interim solution for Nebuchadnezzar's benefit. Interim solution, meaning the dream, which was of a prophetic nature, is going to come to be, but if you want to delay it from taking hold, you want to delay it, here we'll have what Daniel said. And let's see what the pasuk says. This is a pasuk as you'll find in most of Daniel in heavy duty Aramaic. It says there, Lohein Malka Milki Yishpar Aloch V'chata'och B'tzidka Fruk. Daniel says to the king, for delay purposes, I advise you to give charity, and through the giving of charity you will redeem yourself. V'avyosach b'mechan anoyin, and your sins will be also redeemed through kindness, grace you show to the impoverished. And the Gemara continues at the top of Chof Aleph Amud Aleph. Hein teve archo lish leiv soch. This will serve as an extension for your shalva, for your peace and tranquility. So, what do we see here? We have tztoka, charity, being suggested to Nebuchadnezzar as a means of gaining merit, so as to delay the negative prophecy of his dream. Uksiv, and the posuk goes on to say, posuk hafei, Kola mito al Nebuchadnezzar malka. All of that which he saw in his dream befell Nebuchadnezzar the king. Uksiv liksos yarchin tre asar. This is from Pasuk Chavav. Says that it befell him at the end of 12 months, at the end of a year. So what does Rabbi Shmuel tell us? Merit delays punitive results for 1 year. No, we don't see 3 years though. The Gemara continues, Li'olam Rabbi Yishmael. Our mission, we spoke about 3 years, is actually in accordance with Rabbi Yishmael. Ve'ashkach kro di Omar v'toni. There is found a pasuk that states a delay of a year, but that year could be doubled and even tripled. So that if once you have a source for merit delaying for 1 year, and that time can be doubled and tripled, that's how you'll get to 3 years. What's the pasuk indicating that? Dichtiv koyamar Hashem al shloisha pishe Edom. The Almighty says that He can, we'll say, tolerate, withstand three sins of Edom. So we understand that toleration one time is for a year, and multiply that by three, that's how you get to 3 years. And that, of course, is in accordance with Rabbi Shmuel. The Gemara asks, Umay afapi shein raya ledover zech ledover? What is lacking in the psukim that we cited that it's referred to as not a direct proof, but rather a zecher ledover, a hint, a remez to this matter? Is there something, let's say, mathematically wrong with everything we just said? In other words, why can't we use the story involving Nebuchadnezzar and the pasuk involving Pishei Edom? Edom was a Gentile nation, the Edomites. Why can't we use that information to show how long merit actually delays? The Gemara said, I'll tell you why you can't use it as a formal proof, and we call it only a zecher ledavar. Dilma shayni oiv dekichavim. It might be that the way the Almighty deals with idol worshippers, the lo mafkidino lahu. He doesn't mafkidina. In order to appreciate what this means, we look into the Rashi. Rashi across from here says, "Delo mafkidina layu ein mimarin min hashamayim lifkoid avinoisim aleihem ba'olam hazeh." When it comes to God's way of dealing with the Gentiles, it might be that He has a different standard for them as opposed to Jews. So when it comes to idol worshippers, He doesn't visit upon them their iniquity immediately. He waits. He allows them a certain amount of, we'll say, staying power, because all of this is in this world. When it comes to the world to come, they're absent. They're wiped out. Avol mi Yisrael, when it comes to Jews, and here we're talking about the Sota is a Jewish woman, mimarin lipora b'lamazeh umedaktike machareim. The Almighty will visit upon them their iniquity rather swiftly, and won't show the same degree of long sufferingness as He would by goyim. And the Almighty is very scrupulous, very critical and judgmental of Jews in this world. And we've explained this also in the past as a means of essentially constant cleansing of their sins. So that if you see this idea of merit suspending punishment for 3 years, but it's in the context of Edom and Nebuchadnezzar, that doesn't necessarily apply to the effects of merits upon Jewish people. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.